Chapter 1. Vice Night. Then I passed by and saw you kicking about in your blood, and as you lay there in your blood, I said to you, live. September 2006. I zipped into the handicap spot closest to the parking garage elevator and hooked the fake blue handicap placard around my rearview mirror. My brick-red Christian Dior pumps and matching pencil skirt weren't ideal for the long-distance trek from the upper decks of the parking garage into the lobby of the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Of all my working spots, this was far from my favorite one on the track. Though the Paris was better than the dingy, smoke-infested Tropicana, high-dollar clients stayed at the palatial suites of the Wynn, Venetian, or Bellagio. The Paris ranked about a 7 out of 10 on the Las Vegas working girl scale. An average trick in the Paris would probably spend around $500 on a call girl, but I had become accustomed to much higher-paying buyers. As I checked my makeup in the rearview mirror, my mind buzzed with stories of girls getting robbed late at night in garages. I puckered my lips, applied another layer of Ruby Rouge, and dialed the escort service. Maddie answered. "Hey, it's Kelby. I'm here," I said. Maddie's bubbly personality won over most of the customers at Girls to You, one among dozens of Vegas escort services. The most lucrative phone girls could hear money, but not Maddie. She was friendly, and everyone liked her, but booking the biggest calls wasn't her strength. "Okay, Kelb," she practically sang my name, "23145, Johnson, $150 pickup." Her giving my fake name a nickname cracked me up, though it was a common practice among the phone girls. "Thanks," I said, feigning gratitude. All of us, even the phone girls, wanted the biggest, best call of the night. Vegas escort services stay legal by claiming to send a dancer to a hotel room for $150. Anything the girl and the John discuss is between two consenting adults, allowing the booking agency to claim no knowledge of having hired such a girl if she ends up in a bust. The company gets the $150 pickup, the phone girl gets a 20% tip, and the working girl keeps the rest. Of course, the phone girls wanted to send the best of us to draw a larger tip. If one of us started tips at $600, then the phone girl racked up $100 simply by answering the phone. We'd give $150 to the service, $100 to the phone girl, and $500 to the pimp. $1,500 for full service, the nice way to say sex, was always the goal, even if the John had to put it on a credit card. I usually took anything between $500 and $1,500. I hated negotiating, but what I hated more was pissing off the buyer and risking getting hurt. When I stepped out of my air-conditioned car into the parking garage, a wall of heat hit me. Though it was 10 o'clock at night, stifling temperatures oozed from the concrete jungle. A rim of sweat lined my forehead as the elevator bell dinged and the doors slid open. My already aching feet were grateful for the dated brownish-orange floral carpet that lined the casino's halls. As I walked, I studied Toni Braxton's airbrushed cheekbones on the posters advertising the hotel's current shows, Rock and Roll Relived and Toni Braxton. An escalator swept me down another floor to the shopping area. Under a painted blue sky, Parisian-style street lamps held signs that beckoned guests toward the casino, hotel, parking, and boutiques, where customers could buy crystal at Swarovski or the latest designer scent at Parfum de Paris. I grabbed the escalator rail, white-knuckled, and steadied my high heels to brave the bumpy cobblestones. Years of experience proved helpful in maneuvering over the uneven ground. I breezed past two dueling pianos arranged like jigsaw pieces.